de-escalating tense situations, the new focus for law enforcement. That's just ahead. And good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live on the radio at 9, and now make sure to subscribe to that daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, too. Just ahead, a retired FBI chief takes your calls about the Sandra Bland case, missing 20-month-old Lonzie Barton, and more. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Also ahead, diving for ancient shipwrecks in St. Augustine. That's in America's first city. Then later, helping sick children. All you have to do is visit your local Dairy Queen this week. We'll tell you all about that. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, on Sunday, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch said the death of Sandra Bland, who officials say committed suicide in a Texas jail cell after she was detained following a routine traffic stop, shows the importance of training police to de-escalate high-pressure situations. On Sunday, activists here in Jacksonville also held a vigil in downtown Hemming Plaza to remember Sandra Bland. And whether it's her story or other situations that can turn tragic, law enforcement officials are increasingly focused on the technique of de-escalation. What does that mean exactly? Well, this morning we welcome an expert. Tony Krabbitt is the recently retired FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge out of Jacksonville. She's trained local agencies in de-escalation procedures, and she joins us now in studio. Tony, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And the number to join the show as we connect you with retired FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge Tony Krabbitt is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect and email and tweet us or weigh in on Facebook. We'll talk about Sandra Bland in just a moment, but first, the search for missing 21-month-old Lonzie Barton has entered day five in Jacksonville, Tony. Police searching many areas on the south side, the Greenland Road area behind Christ Church, among other locales. As you've been following this search, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's devastating for, obviously, for the family. I think they said last night, Chief Hackney, that this is more of a recovery now. So that's hard on everyone. You know, my hope is that they find the little boy, but, you know, they're following up on every lead. They're relying on the public to, you know, report what they saw, and they will follow up on everything.
They've received more than 120 tips in Lonzie's disappearance, which has led them to this wooded area on the south side. Caregiver Reuben Ebron in custody. He's been named a suspect in the disappearance. As you look at this from the perspective of conducting investigations like this with the Bureau, what's the procedure for bringing this to a successful resolution?
Well, one of the keys is finding the body. Very difficult to, you know, charge and certainly prosecute anyone without a body. Very rare that happens. So that is key, and I think that's why they're focused on finding Lonzie.
And these can be so difficult, too, particularly when it involves family dynamics and a missing child. Investigating and filtering through all the tips that may not lead anywhere and finding the information that will can be challenging, correct?
Absolutely. And that's why I think, you know, they've pooled all of their resources. The public has even offered to help.
Right. And the number to join us as we speak with Tony Krabbitt, she's the recently retired FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge out of the Jacksonville office. We're getting your calls already, and the number to join us is 549-2937. Another high-profile story we've been following, the death of Sandra Bland, the woman that was stopped for failing to signal a lane change in Texas, and a few days later found dead in her Texas jail cell. The video of the confrontation with the police officer has led the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch to say how important she thinks it is to train police to de-escalate high-pressure situations like a traffic stop that can turn confrontational. That's something you specialized in with the Bureau. Tell us about that.
Right. I mean, so important that to me that was one of the most valuable parts of my career and that particular training. You know, if you can't control yourself, how do you control the situation? And, you know, another thought is don't confuse getting even with getting what you want. You know, the law enforcement is in control in that particular situation. So, you know, I watched the video. It appears, I don't know what happened before or after, and I certainly don't want to pass judgment on policy or anything like that. But when you listen to, you know, what happened, it appears that the officer escalated it based on, you know, put out your cigarette. I told you to put out your cigarette and you didn't put out your cigarette. And you have to, you know, it kind of pick your battles. Is that the battle you want to pick? Is that worth fighting?
You recently conducted de-escalation training with the Jacksonville Beach Police Force.
Correct.
Tell us about that. How did that go?
Yeah, the chief was, he asked to have that type of training, and he actually attended the first delivery of that training. And he wants every officer in the department trained on de-escalation. So he spent a full 8 hours talking about communication skills in general, really examining listening. We spent a lot of time on listening, which is one of the communication concepts that is not talked about very much. And in fact, the evaluations, when they came back, that was one of the most valuable blocks to the officers.
Why is that?
Something that they had not really given much thought to, self-awareness. It provided them a heightened sense of awareness about their own habits, and that's what we do fall into because of time constraints, because of distractions, because of our listening preferences, we fall into some bad habits.
When you went through training at Quantico, how was that emphasized?
It was emphasized in the form of active listening skills and as part of the interview and interrogation block, which I was also an instructor of after I had been in the Bureau about 14 years. So very important, because it is you are looking to change behavior. And so the use of active listening skills to demonstrate empathy, to build rapport, and then influence is really what you want to do. That is the stair-step approach to behavioral change.
And by changing behavior, you mean you're looking to change the behavior of the person you're questioning to diffuse hostility, lack of trust?
Yes, yes. And again, it goes to controlling yourself, controlling your own emotions. And one of the strategies, you know, is when I look at the Sandra Bland videos, you know, is that emotion labeling. She was very upset, and perhaps a question, an open-ended question or an emotion labeling, you know, you seem upset. You seem frustrated about something. What else is going on today? Or what else, you know, what's going on? And trying to open that dialogue, and that is part of de-escalation.
And let's go to your calls right now. It's your chance to connect with Tony Krabbitt, the recently retired FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge here in Jacksonville. Whether it's Sandra Bland, the Lonzie Barton story, or whatever's on your mind, give us a call, 549-2937. Jay in Tampa. Hi, Jay. Good morning.
Good morning. One of the questions I have is, or my statement would be, that I think that racism plays a part in an unintended way, and some officers maybe perceiving somebody as a threat and not being willing to de-escalate or feeling that they have to dominate a situation. Is there going to be any attention, or have you done any studies that look at unintended bias and how the subtleties of that may be playing into how officers approach situations?
Thanks, Jay. And of course, when activists on Sunday in Hemming Park displayed the hashtags Black Lives Matter and Say Her Name when they held the vigil for Sandra Bland, that was very much on their mind in terms of their perception that there is a bias among law enforcement toward African Americans. What about that question?
So I think that the issue for law enforcement is one of public safety, and that's foremost in their mind, and then their own safety. You know, so they approach situations. And, you know, you talk about bias. There is some research out there on unconscious bias. And I have not done, you know, in-depth research on my own. But, you know, it's made up. That is our intuition. That is, you know, can somebody really be non-judgmental? I don't know. Because of our experiences, the things that we've gone through, you know, you kind of piece it all together very quickly. So, again, raising awareness to what might be our unconscious biases helps mm-hmm. to mitigate that.
1-800-549-2937 to join the show. On the other hand, it's interesting to see that this is a divisive issue. There are those who say, well, the officer clearly was more hostile toward this person because she was African-American. Other people look at the video and see someone being disrespectful to a police officer and hold the point of view that you must comply with authorities and be respectful no matter what. And how did you deal with that division when you were an active agent?
You know, again, I looked at it like this. It's not about me. It's about getting the information. And it's about accommodating other personalities, and it's letting someone have their voice. Studies have shown that, you know, volatile people that start screaming and ranting and raving typically can't hold that for more than 20 minutes. Now, you know, I know officers are pressed for time, especially those that are on the street. But, you know, sometimes it's the first time that this person really feels like they were listened to. You know, if you use the active listening skills, if you're asking them what's happened today, you sound frustrated, you know, you sound upset. If you're wrong, they'll correct you. People want you to understand.
Did you ever have a situation where you lost your cool, where you were so frustrated or stressed that?
No.
Never?
No, not in front of someone.
And do you credit that to your training, going through the Bureau's extensive training?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And just knowing this isn't about me, it's about getting the information. You know, with interview and interrogation, it's more of a confined, you know, it's not like a car stop, which can be volatile at any time. It's more confined. So you go in with the mindset. So you already have that awareness. You know you're not going to lose control. The other person may, but as they are venting, ranting, whatever it is, they are giving you information.
549-2937. Meg is on the west side. Hi, Meg. Go ahead.
Hi. My experience has been through like 18 months of incarceration, basically for hearsay. And what I've noticed is that cops and COs, correctional officers, will judge you based on your charges, and they will try and, in some cases, make you into the criminal they want you to be so that they feel okay about their position being in charge of you. I have not ever had them really use much in the way of open-ended questions, but if they did, it still wouldn't make me trust them anymore because I've personally been bruised from my shoulders down to like my lower body, and for no reason, because I never cursed at them. I never physically touched them in any way. I mean, I don't personally understand why they use something called pain compliance, which if you look up Webster's Dictionary, pretty much translates into torture, but something needs to really be overhauled with the whole correctional criminal system, because the judges don't even know what they're really sentencing people to, and that's why people commit suicide in jail, because I personally can't do more than 3 days before they send me to the hospital.
Wow. Meg, thanks for sharing that. That's Meg on the west side. Let's go now to Jamel on the north side. Jamel, good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
Go ahead.
My question is, why couldn't the officer have just pulled her over for the traffic, failure to use a traffic signal? Okay, ma'am, I'm issuing you a traffic ticket for failure to use using a turn signal. Write her ticket up and let her go her own way. Why all the questions? That's my question. I can take it off the air.
All right, Jamal, thanks for the call. Tony Kravitz.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer that, Jamal. You know, not being in the situation and not knowing what happened before or after, you know, it's not my intent here to question what, you know, the policy. You know, he may be working within his own department's policy. You know, he is there to enforce the traffic laws. That is part of his job. You know, I really was looking at and at the de-escalation or the escalation of it, and how would you perhaps have de-escalated that? What could he have said instead of reacting with, you know, I told you to put the cigarette out, more of a conversation. He was outside the car anyway, and just really trying to focus on strategies for the future to make officers successful in de-escalating these so that it is not front page news.
549-2937. Alex in Jacksonville. Hello, Alex.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great, thanks.
Thanks. My question is, now that we know that retrospectively she had swung to joint, whether or not she refused to put out the cigarette because she was using that to cover the smell of a joint that she just smoked while in the car, and he took it as her refuting his authority when in actuality she was just trying to cover up evidence. And maybe if he had had greater insight and possible better policing skills, he would have thought, oh, why is she refusing to put out the cigarette? So that's my comment.
Alex, thanks.
Well, yeah, he asked her to put out the cigarette, and you know, again, I don't know if she's covering up evidence or not. It's about, you know, whether to make that cigarette the issue or continue on with, you know, the business of the day.
Mark on the West Side, go ahead, Mark. Thanks for your call.
Hi, I was just calling ask your guest. How are we supposed to?
Oh, we lost your call, Mark. Give us a call back. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Tony Krabbitt, the recently retired FBI assistant special agent in charge out of the Jacksonville office. It's your chance to speak with her, 549-2937. Rick at the Beaches. Hello, Rick. How are you today?
Pretty good. And you?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I agree with your guest. There's a difference between a traffic stop and an interview interrogation, because the person's been trained in interview interrogations goes into the situation, know that, first of all, they're in a superior position, that the other person's not going to go away. There's less chance of violence during an interview interrogation. And you go in with a different mindset. You want to get that person to cooperate. So you're going to do more talking to them and get them to understand and get the confidence that they believe in you. With a traffic stop, you never know what's going to happen. It can escalate where you stop that person, they just had a bad day with a spouse or a significant other. They're venting out on you, and it kind of takes you by shock. So there's a distinct difference in training from learning how to do interview interrogations than making a traffic stop that escalates into a situation.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for pointing that out. Tony Krabbitt, he's got an excellent point.
Right, and he it is a mindset. And so I think with the de-escalation training, it is try to raise awareness and, you know, a mindset that you have a role in this interaction, and every interaction is a mini negotiation. Somebody wants something, wants you to do something. Both people are in control of, you know, have to be in control of their own behavior. Traffic stops are absolutely volatile. At any point could go bad.
They're tense and frightening for the person being stopped, mm-hmm. and for the officer who's making the stop.
Right.
Because they can become so unpredictable.
Right. And so knowing how to use a few of these strategies could be helpful. It's one of the tools for law enforcement and policing to be used, you know, in these situations where they can.
Mark on the South Side is back with us. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to ask your guest, you know, she's saying that she's training police officers how to de-escalate the situation. How many times does she walk into a classroom situation of officers and say, point blank, you know, there's lots of research out there that shows that police officers have biases when it comes to black people in America, and we should start at that point. It seems to me like everybody's really afraid to point out the fact that black people are treated differently when they get pulled over than white people.
That's Mark on the South Side. Tony.
You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the officers really feel like they're policing. They are trying to keep their community safe. And they, you know, it's kind of like administratively, you don't go looking for a personnel problem, but a lot of times they show up in your office, and officers are out in the community or out in the streets, patrolling the streets, and their role is to keep their community safe. So if they see a situation or they're going up to ask a question, they're just trying to you know, determine what the situation is. So, you know, I don't think there's a bias. It's not been my experience that there is a single bias against one single race. That has not been my experience.
And you just said you train Jack's Beach officers. You've conducted this training for a number of agencies, right?
When I was with the Bureau, I conducted it through the negotiation unit and at Quantico, right?
Let's go now to Jennifer in Jacksonville. Hey, Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering what help there was for law enforcement as far as mental health care. I imagine many people who have been on the job for a while might experience something like PTSD, which may make them become a hot reactor in a certain situation. And so is there mental health care for police officers, and are they ever in jeopardy if they share something that they could be placed on leave? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yeah, I can't speak specifically agency to agency, but I can tell you throughout law enforcement that has something, you know, many years ago was not followed, but most of the agencies now have a very active either employee assistance programs and counselors on staff or on retainer that assist with situations, especially when officers have been placed in situations that extremely stressful and emotionally can affect them emotionally.
And here's a tweet from Crystalis. Florida is giving law enforcement $800,000 to train law enforcement officers in crisis intervention techniques so this doesn't happen. This is also here in Jacksonville. She tweets the show. Buck in Southeast Georgia. Hey, Buck, good morning.
Hey, how are you? Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm calling it. This is less about the specifics of this stop and more, I guess it would be more of a macro issue, in my opinion. I've been in law enforcement for 24 years, and I've seen a steady movement away from community policing, where a stop like this would have been far more processional and more towards a tactical law enforcement mindset, where police officers are increasingly told that every interaction could be their last, and so they exert a control over every interaction with the populace that we work for that is really unbending to the point of breaking, as we see in this point. And I think we need to move again away from tactical law enforcement and a police officer considering himself a warrior at every instance, and more towards an Andy Griffith model where it's a community policing outreach program.
Yeah, thanks for that, Buck. What about that? Does there need to be a shift away from officers who understandably are concerned about their personal safety, but figuring out how to balance that against building a rapport with the people that that you're trying to interact with out on the streets?
Well, I think you're seeing that today with the training that I delivered, with the training that FDLE is doing throughout the state. So I think that is recognized that we want to continue to build those skills. It's not that the officers don't have those skills. I think they do, but they are perishable skills. So whether it be maintenance and practice, I think there is more of a focus there.
Let's take one more call. Josh in Jacksonville with us. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just giving you guys a call because I noticed a lot of the callers were talking about, you know, what can the officers be trained to deal with people. You know, the officers getting trained for this and that. And like the last caller said, the officers are expected to be lawyers at every single stop. And I think that they're also expected to be therapists at every single stop. And I was just wondering, how come we can't get this as part of the driver's ed program? When you get pulled over and you get sent to driver's classes, why can't being trained to deal with police officers be part of that? Because I don't think that officers are paid to be attorneys and therapists.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. And here's an email from Marcia. I think this is indicative of society. We need to learn to respect and listen to each other. It's not just a police or racial issue. We have lost respect for one another. Let's close with your thoughts, Tony.
Yeah, I think the last caller makes a very good point. I mean, growing up, you know, myself, and I still get nervous when I get stopped, right? But
do you tell them, "Hey, I'm retired FBI"?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't do that. But I would have never thought, you know, ever about, you know, screaming at a police officer, questioning why you stopped me. You know, I would ask, "Why did you stop me? I want to understand why I was stopped." And I think that he makes a good point that you
do
make
you
that
think
a part
because
of it.
You're white that you're treated differently when you're stopped than a black woman or a black guy is treated?
No.
You don't agree with that narrative?
No.
And here's another tweet from a listener. JSO has employee assistant benefits to where they can get mental health counseling. A barrier to access is the stigma, especially with male officers. As a retired female FBI agent, what do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, this is something that's been talked about around the country in light of, you know, the shootings in the theaters and mental health. Law enforcement is faced with dealing with that every day.
Yeah.
And that actually was the advent of negotiations back in the 70s when people were released from the mental institutions. And anytime there was an issue, it was law enforcement who had to deal with that. So, you know, that's a societal issue.
And it's one we'll continue to follow. In the meantime, it's been fascinating to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tony Kravitz is the recently retired FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge in the Jacksonville Field Office of the Bureau. Much more still ahead later, how a local magazine is putting its unique vision on the runway. But up next, diving for shipwrecks in St. Augustine.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Afternoon keynote speaker Dinah Jordan's motivational messages ring loud and true about how we can make the choice to be happy, finding the funny in your life, taking responsibility for your own health, ways to bust stress, and in doing these four things can make a happier, healthier, more productive you. Good for You Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
On the next Fresh Air, what the neuroscience of schizophrenia, autism, Alzheimer's, and lesser-known disorders can tell us about the sense of self. We talk with science writer Anil Ananthaswamy about his new book, The Man Who Wasn't There. It includes the story of a patient who believes he's dead and another who believes his leg isn't his and wants it amputated. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, chances are you know about or maybe you visited the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Museum. But inside that museum is something really special. It's called LAMP, the Lighthouse Archaeological Maritime Program, an independent institute that surveys inland and offshore waters to discover shipwrecks and other cool stuff. Chuck Mead, director of the Institute's Archaeology Division, and Shannon O'Neill, director of Public Relations, join us now in our America's First City Spotlight. Good morning to you both. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
You know, I've been to the museum and the lighthouse many times, but I did not know about LAMP. So let's get the word out right now. One of the few research units in the nation employing full-time professional marine archaeologists, not guided by a university or government entity. This is a unique organization.
We're pretty special. We're pretty unique. We have, five, six archaeologists and archaeological conservators at the Lighthouse. And so we have a full-fledged research program that's sponsored by the Lighthouse and Maritime Museum.
And a lot of research has been uncovered. But Shannon, of course, what everyone wants to know about are the shipwrecks.
Of course.
Tell us about the shipwrecks.
Well, we've had a couple in the history of the program that we've looked at. The one we've been working on right now since about 2009 is a 1782 British Loyalist shipwreck. So what we know, what we've been able to determine from the artifacts and things we've been able to bring up is that this was one of 16 ships that evacuated Charleston at the end of the American Revolution, was trying to enter St. Augustine, is the inlet there, seeking shelter there because St. Augustine was controlled by the British at the time. And unfortunately, all 16 of those ships ran aground. And the folks that were on those ships who were trying to come to St. Augustine and start a new life lost everything. They were able to get off the ship and get to shore safely, but all of their belongings and things they brought with them were still on board.
Wow. And how does finding the artifacts from these wrecks help give historians and archaeologists' insight? That's such an important aspect of what you do.
Definitely. And there's certainly things you can learn from the archaeology that you just can't get from any of the history books. You know, certainly it's, you know, think of going through somebody's trash, which is essentially what archaeologists do.
Right.
You can learn a lot about a family from going through their recycling bin. So we're really getting the kind of hands-on evidence. The we're scientists. So there's one thing to look at the history books, which tend to be written by the winners of wars and that kind of thing, and tend to focus on, wealthy white males. It's another thing to get the actual pieces of evidence, actual bits and pieces of people's lives, and to put that back together. And you just get a much richer picture of the past.
What are some of the most fascinating tidbits that you've dug up, literally?
Well, this the shipwreck we've been working on, the storm wreck, is really an amazing amazing sight. It's a great one for an archaeologist to work on. The idea of refugees, you know, we heard that on NPR this morning driving here to the studio. It's always timely. And this is a refugee ship. I don't know of any archaeologist that has excavated a ship full of refugees seeking a safe haven. So we are seeing the things that they felt were essential. You know, they had to evacuate their homes. They were on the losing side of this war. They were going to the closest colony to where they were that was still British and loyal, but it was a strange place. You know, they may have lived in South Carolina for generations, and they had to take what they needed to keep their families alive. So we're finding a lot of things that, you know, I guess not surprising. We're finding a lot of cookware and kind of household items and things that maybe you wouldn't think about it unless you really had to pack up your stuff quickly and leave. But you want to keep your family safe. You want to keep them feeling like things are going to be okay. And that's the kind of things that we're seeing.
Sure. And as St. Augustine prepares to celebrate its 450th commemoration in September, you've got a new exhibit that can be part of the celebration. What's going to be happening?
We do. Actually, it will be opening in spring of 2016. We're going to have a new exhibit on this wreck. But even right now, we have a lot going on that folks can come out and see. We do conservation on a daily basis. All of these artifacts, we have hundreds of pieces that we've recovered. They have to be cleaned up, preserved, and made ready for exhibition and also for preservation so that they're things that we'll still have. So we've got conservationists on site who are out there air scribing every day. We've got two cannons, a cannon and a carronade, that are in electrolytic reduction right now that you can come out and see in the vats, see as they're being cleaned up. And it's pretty amazing to see some of these pieces that were on the bottom of the ocean for a couple hundred years.
Absolutely. And if you've never been to the Lighthouse Museum in St. Augustine, this is just one more reason to come to this fascinating spot. It's such a special place to visit, don't you think?
It's a beautiful place. It's a great place to work.
I would think so. Yeah, you guys have it pretty good.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Well, we're so pleased to put the spotlight literally on what you do. It's exciting to be sharing these stories of St. Augustine's history in conjunction with the 450th. So thanks so much for driving up the road to be with us this morning.
Oh, sure
thanks
thing.
Thanks for having us.
It's LAMP at the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Museum. Chuck Mead, Director of the Institute's Archaeology Division, and Shannon O'Neill, Director of Public Relations, joining us. Go visit them, and we're back in a moment.
America's First City is sponsored by the St. Augustine 450th Commemoration and Tapestry Exhibition.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to announce that Mary Enworth will be this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach. Mary is co-author of Pathways to the Common Core. She is deputy director of middle schools at the Teachers Reading and Writing Project, Columbia University. Mary is just one of the many great speakers you will hear throughout the day. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to WJCT/teach.
Boston has said no thanks to the 2024 Olympics, but for Brazil in 2016, yeah, it's too late.
There is a deep ambivalence about hosting these big events in the country that Brazil is today. It's a country where people are no longer so sure that they have what they need.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the price Brazilians are paying, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hey, it's John Moe, the host of Wits, a new show recorded live at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. Some of the top names in comedy and music join us each week for sketches.
You are so far outside the box right now, you are back in the box.
Music.
I'm out of the game.
And life's big questions. How's it going?
It's going great, man. This is a wonderful program.
Saturday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJZT and the Florida Theater present Clifford the Big Red Dog live at the Florida Theater on Sunday, November 15th at 2 and 5 p.m. Call the Florida Theater box office at 904-355-2787.
Welcome back. Well, at the age of 10, Jacksonville's Brittany Scott was admitted to Wolfson Children's Hospital and diagnosed with myositis, arthritis, and myocarditis with complications of congestive heart failure. Brittany's been in and out of the hospital for years, undergoing aggressive treatments for an enlarged heart, severe stomach problems, and other issues. But she didn't let her health problems slow her down. Brittany graduated high school with honors, pursued a degree in digital media, and even started her own digital design business. And what we want to tell you is that Brittany's story is not unique. Every minute, dozens of children enter a Children's Miracle Network hospital like Wolfson's for treatment. To help those kids get the care and treatments they need, participating Dairy Queen and DQ Grill and Chill restaurants throughout this region are going to celebrate Miracle Treat Day this Thursday. It's going to benefit Wolfson Children's Hospital and the pediatric programs at UF Health Jacksonville. Here to tell us all about it, we welcome Brittany Scott along with DQ owner-operator Scott Geezer from the Kingsley Avenue Dairy Queen. Guys, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being here. Brittany, let's start with you. What an amazing story you have to tell. And I guess Wolfson Children's Hospital is one of the reasons why you're here with us today, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I was 13, like the teen child life representative would like come and have all like a whole bunch of activities for me to do. And that would just like brighten my day with everything that was going on.
Right, because I'm sure there were some dark days, but you made it through with a lot of help and support.
Yes, like there was a point in time like I wouldn't even smile or laugh anymore because of all the things that were going on, what I couldn't do, what I used to be able to do, and then they stepped in, Children's Miracle Network stepped in and like brightened my day and just made my days like better. From everything, like just to take you away from all the medical.
To take your mind off the medical problems.
Yes.
Right. And Scott, that's what Miracle Treat Day is all about. This is coming up Thursday, and Dairy Queen is a big part of it. What's going to be happening?
Yes, it is. Actually, Brittany is a perfect example of why we're so proud to be part of this organization. Dairy Queen is all about families and kids, and so we think it's a perfect fit. This Thursday, all anybody has to do is go and enjoy a blizzard, and they'll be helping out a great cause.
That's all you got to do. Buy a blizzard.
That's it.
Any participating location.
That is correct. Every single location in the Jacksonville market, which goes from actually Blackshear, Georgia, all the way down to St. Augustine, out to Palatka and every location in the Jacksonville metropolitan area.
Now again, yeah, and this is Thursday. And by the way, you were kind enough to bring some blizzards with you to the studio. How lucky are we? This is the best thing who can go wrong with a blizzard in the summertime, right?
That's right. And that's another exciting thing is this is the earliest we've ever done Miracle Treat Day. So, schools still be out. It'll be hot. It'll be a perfect reason to go out and enjoy a nice ice cream treat. We also do other things throughout the year to help raise money for CMN, but this is our big one.
This is the big one.
This is the big one.
In fact, over the last 30 years, Dairy Queen has raised more than $100 million for Children's Miracle Network hospitals like Wolfson's and UF Jacksonville. That's a pretty big number. And by the way, this blizzard looks like it has Oreo cookies in it. Am I right?
That is an Oreo.
Oh,
that's the best
one. That's my jam, Brittany. Now, which one's your favorite flavor?
Oreo
cookie?
Yes.
So this is so cool. And by the way, if you want to use the hashtag Miracle Treat Day, you can look up and find the nearest location to you to go grab a blizzard. But you have to buy the blizzard, right? That's the fundraising mechanism.
The blizzard. All our proceeds, at least at our store, all the profits from our blizzard sales will go to CMN that day. Every store is donating at least a dollar from every blizzard sale to CMN.
Very nice. And so you've started your own business, Brittany. Tell us about that.
Well, I graduated last year in May, and then I've applied for like a couple of different positions, and I've had some health issues come up, so I started going back to school so I can get like a business certificate that would help me start my own graphic design business. So I'm in the process of figuring out what direction I want that to go in, and getting that up and running and going.
Well, best wishes and best of luck. I'm sure you'll be successful, and you're so inspiring to me and so many other people.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to
be here. And thank you, Scott. Thanks for bringing the treats, too.
Well, you're welcome.
Again, it's Miracle Treat Day. This Thursday, at any Dairy Queen in your area, just buy a blizzard and help children like Brittany. We're back in a moment.
President Obama's clemency initiative was created for nonviolent offenders serving long sentences.
I'm on my 14th year and fifth month of incarceration, and hopefully we'll go home in November.
But red tape and a big backlog mean the White House's program is in trouble. That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
For the past 40 years, El Sistema has brought free classical music, instruments, and lessons to hundreds of thousands of kids in Venezuela. 5 years ago, they started a new ensemble, the Simon Bolivar Big Band. From Venezuela's mountain villages to New York's House of Swing, we'll hear how jazz is a lot more than just music. That's this week on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
Mm-hmm.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to announce that Mary Enworth will be this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach. Mary is co-author of Pathways to the Common Core. She is deputy director of middle schools at the Teachers Reading and Writing Project, Columbia University. Mary is just one of the many great speakers you will hear throughout the day. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to WJCT/teach.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour. Well, we've been getting so many requests about how to listen to our new radio station, Relax Radio, that today on the show, we're going to do something really special. We're going to give away an HD radio so you can listen to the beautiful music all day long. Music director and Relax Radio creator David Luckin is here now with a radio in studio, a portable one, and this looks really cool. Good morning.
Melissa, I just want to hear the music. Do we have to talk?
No, we really don't.
No, I love this. Henry Mancini. We got a nice little portable Relax Radio you can put in your car and use your aux cable. You can put it on your kitchen window counter there. Put it poolside, anywhere you are. You can jack a better speaker into it to get even stronger sound, but it's a nice little portable. And as Melissa said, because we've had so many requests on how do I listen, how do I get a radio, we thought we would be kind and give one away.
That's right. We have one to give away right now. Listeners, email us if you want a free HD radio. Just send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick one winner at random and mail that HD radio out to you. Now, the way this works is Relax Radio, which is incredible music from the big band era through the baby boomer era.
To the early 70s.
Up to the early 70s is only available on our HD3 channel. So it's 89.9 FM HD3, David.
Check your car. Most cars have it now.
Yeah. If you have HD in your car, you can tune us in. But if not, here is another alternative.
And it's all kinds of music. We like to say from the Chattanooga Choo Choo to the Marrakesh Express, we just heard Mancini. We've got an oldie here for you. See if you remember this one. This is In the Rotation. Voice, Mr. Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison.
Don't you love him?
Now, you and Sean Birch, our producer, programmed Relax Radio with thousands of songs.
About to upload 200 more today.
And you're uploading 200 more today. Their demand is growing all the time because, of course, when Jacksonville lost its mainstay for standards, Jones College Radio, people were so upset, and not just baby boomer and greatest generation era listeners. Younger listeners, too, want to hear this music.
Like your kids love the standards. They love
my
Sinatra.
My kids love it. Absolutely. When my dad visits Jacksonville, he used to turn Jones College Radio on in the car. My daughters heard it, and they liked it. And so they want to hear this music, too.
And it's a huge variety. It's really three different genres. We have light jazz. We have the oldies, a lot of Motown and Elvis and the Beatles and the Beach Boys. And then we have the Great American Songbook with Ella, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, Bublé, Michael, that is. Melody Gardot, we've added Jack Johnson. I just heard a great new track from Taylor Swift on her new album called Clean that she partnered with Imogene Heap for. And
so
she will be in the mix. So
you're putting Taylor Swift even in there.
Absolutely, because it is such. Imogene Heap was a singer from 07, and now she's on her own. So it's contemporary. It's classic. It's a lot of songs you can sing along with, and no depressing songs. These are all pretty happy songs.
But the criteria is this is music that has to fit the idea of relax, which is...
Which some people might argue with. Dancing in the Streets, Martha and the Vandellas, is not exactly relaxed. But compared to the crazy world we're living in, it's a nice throwback. Instead of just Thursday, it's a throwback every day to the music we grew up with.
And not only is the music going nonstop, there are news updates from NPR at the top of every hour.
And weather. So
and
it's a
weather.
Full-service radio station. We're really proud about that, that it keeps you well-informed of your world today and then lets you flash back to sweeter times.
That's right. And so if you're just tuning in and you want a free HD radio so you can listen to Relax anywhere you go, email us and let us know that you want this gift. It's our special giveaway for the show today. Just email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick a winner at random and mail this radio. It's a small little portable radio, but the sound quality is terrific. This is such a great deal. You can listen to a lot of HD radio stations on here, but of course we want you to listen to 89.9 HD3.
And let's remind people, HD2 is a classical music service. So classical music 24 hours a day, music of your life 24 hours a day. And I think Sean's going to give us a little bye-bye music here with Henry Mancini again, because this is such a nice, dreamy song. And I will tell you, Melissa, at least three artists I know have sampled this in the 2000s, so it's one of those songs that has legs.
Just like so many songs on Relax.
Yes.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
And one lucky listener will be listening soon. That's our program. Thanks for tuning in. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. Diane Reams up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're going to close with a little more Henry Mancini. Enjoy the music.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.